Hi there. Do you ever crave getting a little more personal with Pocket Gamer? Do you ever read one of our posts and think, oh, I'd love to share this experience with more people? Do you ever miss out on any of our gorgeous headlines or their super sensual subtitles? Well, make sure that you're following us on twitter.com/pocketgamer and have liked us on Facebook by typing Pocket Gamer into Facebook's search bar. Do so, and you'll get the very latest news from the world of iOS. And if you're after something a little more exotic, there's full coverage of Android, Windows Phone, and much, much more. All of this direct to the social media platform of your choosing. We'll be seeing you online.
Welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 205. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this extra special end-of-year episode of the podcast, we have a large number of the Pocket Gamer crew with us. I looked at someone incriminating that. No, it looks awful. What's all this noise? All this noise in the background. Who have we got with us? Well, starting off, we have
Harry Slater.
Who else?
Richard Brown, production editor, Pocket Gamer.
Wow, that's a
I didn't know we had to say who we were as well. I write about cubes.
He writes about Harry writes about cubes. Rich writes about
I don't.
Oh, he doesn't.
No cubes.
No cubes. Apparently. What about you, Peter? How about you?
I'm Peter Willington, head editor at PocketGamer.co.uk.
And marketing
and that from.
No, that makes it sound like he's not cool though.
Yeah, that's true. That's
and
true.
He's so cool.
Community outreach.
That makes it sound like.
That sounds like you're helping people who just got out of prison or something.
Yeah. I'm helping old people find out about Cut the Rope.
It's an important role. Yeah. Who are these other two strangers we have in the corner?
I'm not doing this, no.
Regular listeners will know who that voice belongs to. But we have another stranger to our podcast.
Hello, I'm Mark Brown.
Hey, it's Mark Brown. He has been mentioned before, Deputy Editor Mark Brown, who has been accused of not liking freemium. But does really like freemium, or does he? I don't know. It's, you know.
Like Into the Dead.
That's true. We talked about Into the Dead the other week. And
some people have sort of referred to you as an enigma.
Have they?
Yeah, definitely. People.
Yeah.
Just people on the street.
Oh, that
people
on the street. Just now?
Yeah. Yeah, that was me.
Just a straw poll before the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Richard, you say he was an enigma?
What makes Mark enigmatic? What's the reason behind this?
Yeah, it's the cape.
it's
the signal.
His t-shirt with enigma written on it.
Mm-hmm.
That helps. But who's this lurking in the corner?
Well, I thought we'd establish that that I wasn't going to introduce myself.
We'd established, well, you'd established
it,
we're saying
it. Quiz for podcast listeners, who is that in the corner?
In a question.
Who's that in the corner?
That's the worst quiz ever.
They know who I am.
Say it.
No.
Ah,
go on, John.
Yes.
We're all last when they say his name.
It's Keith Andrew, of course it is, we all know who he is.
There you go, so you could do it.
It spoils the magic, though, doesn't it?
The magic. We're in a hotel room, yeah.
We actually are. We're in a hotel room in Bristol. We have all headed up here for the Xmas conference. So we've been pretending to share ideas, work, push forward, come up with interesting new ways of, you know, pushing the site into exciting new directions. But really, we've just been...
And think of blue skies.
Think of blue skies, outside of boxes.
Outside of boxes.
All that sort of stuff.
Synergy? And goalposts.
Any synergy?
No. Plenty of brands in a jeans.
No. Grassroots.
Yeah. As well. Also important. But really, we've just been sort of
hanging
out in bars, mostly. But we've taken a break from that to come and talk to you lovely people for a bit before we head out again. So we should probably do something a bit news-like, just to keep it topical. So let's go to the news.
news!
Anyone with a 3DS, even though this isn't a 3DS podcast, quick disclaimer there, may have been familiar with a Final Fantasy game that came out, I think, earlier in the year. Yeah. It was this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't a turn-based role-playing title, as you might have expected from such a thing. It was actually a rhythm music game called Final Fantasy Fiat Rhythm, or the other way around, Fiat Rhythm Final Fantasy.
Fiat Rhythm Final Fantasy.
But a 3DS game in which you tap the stylus on the screen in time with little circles moving from left to right, and they played classic tunes from the Final Fantasy oeuvre.
Final Fantasy 1 to 13.
In fact, yeah, 1 to 13, great. In fact, there were some of them from 13 that was a surprise, like, anyone would even know or had.
Yeah, and some missing tracks, and yep, but Cloud's in it, so it's fine.
Yeah, so that's okay. So it played lots of Final Fantasy songs that people were very, very keen on, and we liked it. We gave it at least a silver, I think?
It was a silver.
It was a silver? Yep, so we gave it good ratings and deemed it to be quite good fun. As of now, iOS users can now download the very same game for their iPhone. There are a couple of new tweaks. There's been a few new things added. For example, there's something called a Quest Medley mode, which allows you to play all of the songs kind of in a row. It's free to download initially, but we get the impression you're going to be paying for each track as it comes. Whether that's a good thing or not depends on your view on the whole freemium thing. But, guys, are we in any way excited for this? Are we going to be Fiat rhythming long into the night?
So I did the review for the 3DS version. I thought it was fantastic, basically. And even when I was reviewing it on 3DS, I thought, this has got to come to mobile. It's just an obvious move that Square Enix have to make. And the great thing about that was, obviously, you were kind of paying up front for this big lumps, like, big chunk of songs from the back catalogue. But the bad thing was that it didn't have things like the Final Fantasy VII battle theme, and if you're like a big Final Fantasy fan, it didn't have that, so it's like, I know, right?
Was it DLC?
Calm down. It was DLC. So it was like a Nintendo download stuff, so it was like £1.24 for like a track or something like that. So it was a little bit, I know.
Stupid on iTunes.
And you'd have to use the Nintendo stuff to get it.
Exactly. So the idea of... and there was also a load of rubbish, basically. So Final Fantasy 1 and 2 and 3, all the way up to, I guess, probably 4, the music wasn't so great. So you were kind of playing along to songs that were just chiptune tracks. And that wasn't the best. So being able to put together your own selection of songs that you actually want and get rid of all of the fluff, to me, that is quite cool, I suppose, quite interesting. But
will it change the progression of the game? If you're picking and choosing which songs you want, doesn't that mean that there's going to wreck the difficulty curve?
No, because there's no... Essentially, you could pick any game and then play it, and it was all pretty much the same difficulty because you kind of chose difficulty from like an earlier menu and then you chose which track you wanted to go. So, you know, on like a Rock Band, you get like an easy, medium, hard, you know, it doesn't go outside. And then, so essentially, you know, you could just kind of play along to the tracks that you really, really wanted to. A bit more of a sort of tapas way to pick tracks. I think that's fine.
Final Fantasy Tapas.
Final Fantasy Tapas. It's the doujin, the hentai doujin that
I would play.
You actually got to ask for it specifically behind the counter. Okay. Tapas.
Under the counter, very interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, some might say that the rhythm genre has taken a little bit of a dive, or at least it's past its prime. We've kind of on the way down ever since they knocked off the Guitar Hero franchise and things. Is anyone else going to be running out to get this, guys? Harry, are you interested at all?
No. I mean, I can see why it would work, and you sort of sold it nearly, apart from the bit where you were talking about all the music for the first 4 games is rubbish.
Yeah.
which kind of says to me, maybe it's not that good. But I think the iOS devices are perfect for tapping, because obviously, you know, for that sort of...
Yeah.
But I don't care enough about Final Fantasy music to pay any money for any songs.
So do you care about Final Fantasy at all, like the actual series itself?
Not particularly. I played Final Fantasy VII, like 8 times.
Wow.
But
that's a lot of disc swapping. Yeah, I didn't have many friends. But had all those discs.
All the discs. But no, like I didn't like 8. I liked 9. I didn't like 10. I didn't like. I played 11 briefly, and it was one of the dullest games I've ever played.
I never did that one.
I got killed by a wasp, and I thought, no, that's it. If things that can not kill me in real life kill me, then what's the point? And then I think 12 had a dinosaur in it. But yeah, like, I don't think it's meant for me, this game. It doesn't interest me.
Are there really no Final Fantasy fans in it?
Slightly lukewarm, Mark?
I've never played Final Fantasy game.
What is going
Ooh.
On?
Doesn't like freemium and has never played Final Fantasy. Get out!
And I'm musically challenged, James. I have rhythm, but... I've rhythm.
You can ask for anything more.
But I'm musically challenged, so...
Okay. No.
Yes. Wait.
So just you then, Peter.
You don't need to have...
Keith!
You know me, I love at least Japanese things. Yeah,
that was great. JRPGs.
But you do like dancing around tacky music.
Is there any like cutscenes where they say incomprehensible spiel across the screen that makes no sense whatsoever?
Well, no, because that would go over the role for music.
Quite like this thing.
There are cutscenes though, so you can see that classic ballroom scene in Final Fantasy VIII. Do the little dance by tapping on the screen, then dragging the cursor.
Are there feathers in slow motion?
There certainly are.
I like Mark, have never played Final Fantasy, nor wanted to play Final Fantasy.
It does, yeah, they are for a specific crowd. And I was sucked in by 7.
He just died.
Sticks in the mouth. Yeah. Yeah.
Outrageous. Well, there might be a better response out there in the real world. If you do want to play Theorhythm on your iOS player, you can go out and grab it for free. But like I say, expect to shell up some cash if you want to play more than one song.
How much are the bundles? How much are the packs?
It hasn't been listed yet. I think this was announced today and it's coming out tomorrow, which will be Thursday. So I'm going to... It's Square Enix, so it's so difficult to tell. I want to say 69p, but £69 is not out of the question.
A track.
We shall see. We'll have to work out. But talking of old franchises that are reinvigorated into new formats... There is a very old game. If you are one of our slightly older listeners, I don't want to say very old because that's going to alienate everybody who is listening. But anyone who's familiar with the Games Workshop tabletop games, so we're dealing with things like Warhammer and Warhammer 40K, small figures, tape measures, and hours of bedroom-related fun.
Ponytails. Ponytails. Hair, beards.
Lack of estrogen in the room.
Lack of washing.
Yeah, all that stuff. No, not at all. It was a noble pastime, an honest pursuit by younglings before the exciting days of three-dimensional view screens and dual-screen things and screens, really. There were these things called tables, guys.
They had tops.
Yes, it's in the encyclopedia. It's in Wikipedia somewhere. Anyway, one of the spin-offs from the Warhammer 40K universe was a tabletop game which brought the focus down from the very large-scale combat that you got in something like 40K, which was huge armies fighting one another, to a very small experience where you had 6 of your Space Marine Terminators, or 6 or more, I forget the number, and instead of taking on massive battlefields, you were in very small corridors fighting off alien hordes. It was very much loosely based around the Aliens movies, i.e. corridor fighting with small pockets of people, with aliens popping up around the corner. Part of the fun of it was a little bit horror-esque, as in a lot of the aspects were hidden from the player, so you didn't know how many aliens were on the ship. The Space Hulk itself is a floating vessel in space. The Space Marines are coming in to investigate and look for information and technology and possibly, try and just basically destroy anything that's there. So part of the fun of the game was going in and not knowing when something was going to jump out around the corner and get you. Those aliens being gene stealers, which were those quad-armed buggers that I will admit to having painted a couple of.
Can you say that? Are we on buggers? Is that right?
Oh, buggers is fine.
Buggers is fine.
It's charmingly British.
Yes, it's pre-watershed, Keith. Don't worry, it's absolutely fine. That game has had a couple of mobile incarnations, actually. There was one back in 2005 on Java, I think. Yeah, it's been done before, and it's been done on PC game and platforms and various things. There is a new version coming. 2013, a studio called Full Control has decided to take it on, and they're doing a 3D version of Space Hulk, for the modern audiences. It's going to be a little bit different than previous incarnations. They're going to put an emphasis on multiplayer this time around. So people are going to be able to go cross-platform, link up with people playing on PC, Mac, and iOS, and they're going to be able to build their own levels, which ties in neatly with the original game, because you could, it was kind of built out of little cardboard segments you could assemble into different shaped space hulks, and then you would, trot on down and build your own levels and blow the hell out of everything that was there. I was going to say crap, but then I realised I can say crap, because that's also pre-Watershed. You got me worried now, I can't say anything.
Blow the buggers out.
Exactly. Yeah. God, this is liberating. But yeah, we're going to have a version of Space Hulk coming to iOS in 2013. Now, I know at least one of the assembled crew here likes a bit of Space Hulk. Harry!
I do like a bit of Space Hulk.
You do like a bit of Space Hulk?
Yeah, well, I mean, like you say, the thing I'm excited about is the multiplayer, the being able to, one player plays the Gene Stealers and one player plays the Terminators like they do in the game. Mm. And that sort of... that's the kind of dynamic I want to see in asynchronous multiplayer. You know, I'm setting up traps and putting terrifying monsters around the corner for my friend to walk around the corner so I can rip his face off through his helmet. That, and, you know...
That's what friends are for.
Exactly. and anything 40k, I just I lap up like a spoiled child, to be perfectly honest. So, yeah, I'm super excited about it, even though... the developer doesn't have the greatest track record with their other titles. They weren't very well received, shall we say.
When I wrote up the story on the site and the press release came out and I was kind of like, this is very interesting, and they said, you know, it's been loosely based on some of the mechanics from one of our previous games that was extremely well received. And I was like, oh really, was it? Fantastic. I looked it up. They may have gilded the lily slightly with that one. I'm not sure it was as well received as they
said. What have they done before?
It was so impressive and epoch making that I can't remember what it is.
Tactical shooters, zombies, or something really inspiringly.
Excellent.
All the things you can think of that are bad in the App Store.
Okay.
So it was some kind of weird homogenization of all of that. But they could knock it out of the park with this one. Yeah, we don't know. And seeing as it's a property that is beloved by some, you specifically, was anyone else a fan? Did people do the 40k thing pass everybody by, or were there fans?
I barely play video games, let alone...
I know you don't play video games. I thought I might be, because you're a huge 40k.
It's even further down the line, really, isn't it? You know, I'm out doing sophisticated things, living my life. Going about games all the time.
What are you even doing at this conference?
But we establish this every week, don't we, Kate?
I'm the soul.
Soul's got to have a purpose as well. Can't just be a soul soloing around in the corner of the room. You've got to contribute.
You can't.
It's on a free ride.
No, the answer is no. There you go.
That's a shame. Mark,
I painted a few figures, but I was about 6 years old, so my artistic talent wasn't really up to scratch, so it was just sort of blobs.
Aww.
Things are the ones my brother lent me, so I kind of ruined them.
I was kind of the same in as much as I liked the painting bit and never got round to the playing.
It was like Pokemon cards where you trade them but you never actually play the game.
Yeah, it was more about just having...
It's just having Jigglypuffs and stuff.
I'm still waiting for my Jigglypuff to come through.
Would there be a handicap system in place? Because obviously it's cross-platform multiplayer between PC, Mac... iOS. Mm-hmm. iOS are at an extreme disadvantage, surely.
What with the touchscreen?
Yeah, touchscreen.
Because it's asynchronous. Yeah.
So it won't be quiet.
Yeah, it'll be like you move your little men digitally, and then they move their little men.
So it sounds real cool.
It's not like an FPS or anything where the tactile nature of it you need skill. It'll be moving things on a grid, basically. Okay.
Because that came up elsewhere. There was a story last week about a handicap system being implemented by the developer because of the nature of the input methods. I can't remember which story
it was. Well, I've seen there was one vaguely Counter-Strike-esque game that came out. I think it was last week or the week before, but I saw it when I was over in one of the Paris conferences, and that was supposed to be cross-platform as well. And that threw up the same question, like if it's a first-person shooter, then they're notoriously tricky to control. on iOS. Certainly in comparison, if you were going up against PC players, then you'd just be dead in a second.
Yeah, there has to be a handicap system in place.
Yeah, you would think that there would be. But no, I think you're right. I imagined. I mean, to be fair, they didn't actually say if it was turn-based, but that's what it's got to be, isn't it? It's going to be a turn-based system, asynchronous, like Hero Academy or that sort of stuff, where you can just wait for the thing to go beep, and then you take your turn. Which is probably would work a treat. I'm interested to see how big the audience will be, though. It's been a while. 1989.
It's a version of Space Hulk released in 2009.
Yeah, they keep re-releasing it. I mean, like Games
Workshop.
Does it
still sell?
Yeah. Games Workshop still like they will put out a version of. Well, they've done it with the original Warhammer and 40K, and mm-hmm. Space Hulk and Necromunda and all these other stupid named
tabletop games.
Gorkamorka. Yeah, Gorkamorka.
Now you're just making vowel sounds.
And the same with Blood Bowl. They keep re-releasing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like D&D in the same way that there's different rule sets and people move over to the next rule set, or some people just kind of hang back and go, no, that's not really up for me. So I haven't played Games Workshop games since I discovered women. So
last Thursday.
So last Thursday, yeah.
Sorry, that's lame, but I had to do it.
but there's definitely a market for it, and Space Hulk is one of the non-main game. Separate board games that the Games Workshop fans tend to actually go for, and it does have a bit of a cult following. So, I think there's a decent.
Well, I think you're right. I was surprised when I actually put the article up. I was like, is this going to generate any kind of audience? And then people started tweeting in. You're like, oh, okay, there must be something. It's definitely got a groundswell, and it might be some of the older players. But I guess if they keep releasing it every year, there must be a youth contingent that also is into it as well.
Yeah,
in my local town, game shut down. An HMV shut down, but there's still a Games Workshop opposite to Just
They're
for Games.
They're still massively profitable.
But they sell sausage rolls, so false advertising. Sorry,
Games Workshop, genuinely, they are one of the few companies over the last two or three years that in the recession have turned profit and have actually increased their sort of market.
Well, those figures weren't cheap, considering that it's all
That's because they're white metal. Yeah. That's because they're white metal, and you have to pay extra money for white metal over the years, and you have to rebuy all those figures.
They're not metal anymore, they're plastic. There's actually quite a sad story.
Are they all metal?
Yeah, they've got a new thing with resin.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, there's actually quite a story.
It's a new thing, resin.
the guy who.
He's never seen Jurassic Park.
Who invented the 1988 first edition of Space Hulk is now penniless, and so it's quite a sad story. So think of that.
Well, thank you.
If you market the names you came up with, Harry James. Anyway.
Think of him weeping in a bin, clutching the Space Marine, the last lead Space Marine, single tear. Oh, that's tragic news. Well, hopefully we can all buy the game when it comes out next year.
Based on third edition, so we won't get
nothing. We just completely bought this podcast right down.
So perhaps we could all boycott the game in 2013. On principle, no. Space Hulk will be coming out in 2013 in one form or another. If you're a fan of it, you can obviously go in.
Isn't 2013 sound futuristic? It's years in the future, isn't it? 2013.
Well, it's next year.
I know, that's what's scary.
Three weeks.
Just hurry on. Just keep saying 2013. Right. It sounds like years in the future, like, you know. Space 2013.
It is years in the future.
The year that it becomes the future is 2019. Everybody knows that that's the year when everything happens.
2015, isn't that when Back to the Future? So that's Hoverboards. Why.
That's a good one.
I thought it was 2018.
Back to the Future. I don't think any of that's actually going to happen.
I think there's a movies.
It wouldn't lie in there.
Mark's not coming on the podcast again. Well, that's all the new news we're going to cover today, because this is a slightly special episode. We're not going to do new releases, and we're not going to do what we've been playing, because frankly, we've been drinking, not playing. You know, you haven't been playing anything, Keith. Your name's Keith.
I'm going to play things next time. I have things in preparation.
All right.
You'll be shocked.
I'll be stunned.
Didn't pay for them, but yeah.
Oh, well done. That's the best way to play, apparently. What we will do, however, is, being as it's nearing the end of the year, we'll do a little round robin of who enjoyed what this year. Some of our best picks. The most enjoyable games that we've experienced on iOS over the past however many months it's been.
Best games of 2012.
Well, I'll start off, and therefore steal one of the best options from everybody else.
Check Rayman.
Actually, well, no, yeah, that's teasing. Well, I was actually torn between two. I really liked Rayman Jungle Run. Someone else can talk about that in more detail. I also really, 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 and I only recently discovered it, really liked Splice. Sorry, Harry. I've just robbed Harry, because Harry was the one who reviewed it, so I figure he's talked about it enough, so I can't talk about it instead. It is a very, very... It's a very, very minimalist puzzler in which you have to rearrange cells that are kind of floating in space, and you have to... There's a kind of pattern that's laid out, a pre-existing strand of cells, and what you have to do is rearrange the cells, maneuver them around the screen in order that they slot into the right space. It's not as simple as just grabbing a cell and plopping it into the right spot, because when you move one cell, it actually affects the alignment of the rest of them. So what you have to do is kind of work out by trial and error, by moving a cell, see how the rest of it reacts, and then you can work out what the best move is to slot it in. The idea is you have to do it in as few moves as possible. Once you've succeeded, it moves on to the next stage. And then other variables start kicking in. So you'll find cells that allow you to split cells into two directions. So if you just drag downwards on the screen, all the cells beneath it on the strand will suddenly jump into two parts. And that changes the shape and, again, alters the way in which you fix it. It sounds terribly complicated when you explain it, which is interesting considering the game actually has no instructions. You literally have to just feel your way through and find out what's going on. Initially, it can seem a little bit daunting, but through a mixture of really, really high-quality presentation and some seriously ingenious design, it just kind of draws you in. The presentation of the thing goes all the way through to the fact that even the menu system seems to react in a way like it itself is kind of a continuous strand of DNA. So you start off with the title screen with Splice, and then you swipe, you know, when you touch it or swipe forward, it shoots off into the background and is replaced by the next one. And every level kind of comes towards you bit by bit by bit. It's a very kind of cleverly thought-out system, and any game that's brave enough not to include any kind of instructions and just let you find your way through is kind of worthy of note. I mean, it could quite easily not work, but in this case, despite it being kind of tough, I think it really does. Harry gave it a Platinum Award, the only one he did this year, said it was awesome. I played it under your recommendation and was delighted. It's a fantastic game. It recently came to Android. We don't really care about that, obviously. that we might do in the future.
Ooh. Oh, jeez.
But for the time being, Android boo is. But it's available on iOS, and it's, I think it's about 69p. It's not an expensive one.
What you just said sounds so dull.
I've got it. After this podcast, I will throw it over.
The thing about Splice is, I was sat reviewing it on my server, splicing away, and my girlfriend was sat next to me, and sort of watching over my shoulder, and slowly she just got drawn into it as well. And we were both just trying to figure out, all it is just moving bits of things around and trying to get them into the shape that's there. Which, again, sounds terrible,
yeah.
But really not selling this game at all. But it's an experience you wouldn't get on another medium. It's tactile in a way that few games are. It feels like here is, you know, one of the apps that the iPad was made for, because everything feels organic and interesting, and the soundtrack is also amazing. It's one of those games where you pick it up and it feels like it's a part of the thing that you've just picked up. It's not like I am now shooting men or jumping across things or building a farm. It feels like it's an extension of, God, I'm talking such rank.
Right, you know, it feels like,
no, it's a better explanation than, yeah, I gave. It sounds much more interesting, I'm sure. Peter would be more keen on playing that game.
Yeah.
Was it the only game, full stop, to receive a Platinum Award on Hood Game this year?
It was.
Just Harry's, it was.
No, we don't dish them out willy-nilly. It was the only one
ever given as well in my
PG career.
And Harry reviews many, many games. So that is praise indeed.
Indeed.
So yeah, I sort of stole your one there. Is there another one that you also enjoyed?
Oh yeah, no, that was the only game I enjoyed this year.
Oh,
all the games were
injured.
The last time I was on this podcast, I talked about a game called Ring Fling, which I still think is one of the best games that came out this year. It's
sort of like air hockey, but multiplayer on an iPad.
Oh, I've seen that.
And you're like flicking things into rings, and again, I'm doing it just awful job of describing it. But it's that it gathers people around the device, and it engages them in ways that other games don't. That if you start having a single player experience, then you're starting your own. You're huddled over your phone, and you're. But with this, you put the iPad flat, and everyone has a corner, and everyone has special moves, and anyone can play it. You just flick stuff about. It takes a minute to play around, and it's just fun. Mm. Just really, and it's gorgeous graphics, and yeah, I would say that and my guilty pleasure, which was The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I just loved swinging around New York.
Which
like,
is
like a child, just giggling. There were all these crimes happening, and I didn't care. Get mugged, you stupid New Yorkers! I'm gonna go swing on a balloon.
And it's the best part of all the Spider-Man absolutely. Games. Any Spider-Man game worth its salt is not good because of the violence. It's good because of the swinging about.
Yeah.
So
those are my picks.
Fantastic. You're on the topic. You just did the double thumbs up there and the cheesy
spot. Oh, podcast. Yeah, got
yes.
it. Okay.
Audio medium.
Yeah.
Nice. Side gags. Mm. Rich, what about yourself? What did you enjoy this year?
I was just going to start by saying I'm a production editor, so I'm not contractually obliged to review any games for Pocket Gamer. So I benefit, I have the luxury of just enjoying games for another reason than pure enjoyment.
So oh, you play them for fun?
What?
It's crazy. It's insane. It's wacky. But the two that I've not necessarily, arguably not the best games on my device, but they're the two games I've played most frequently and enjoy most regularly are Rayman Jungle Run and Punch Quest. And the sole reason for that is they both of them have brought out the competitive edge in me, and I think it's slightly disturbing just how competitive I get because Mark's referenced this on a number of occasions, but in the past couple of weeks half of the Pocket Gamer staff have been engaged in these kind of high school chasing leaderboard escapades on Punch Quest, where it's this kind of constant one-upmanship battle, and everyone's looking for to post the highest score imaginable.
Sure.
And I've kind of been inspired by Harry, Mike.
It's getting emotional.
It is. It's quite touching.
Getting choked up.
Until you realise that I just wanted to beat them. And that was my objective for about 6 days. 6 days solid. I mean, Harry posted this ridiculously high score, I think it was in the 200,000s. I must have dedicated at least half an hour.
I thought you were saying
that.
Each hour. So you're saying
about an hour on six consecutive nights after the Champions League highlights.
Priority.
just kind of destroying Harry's score and also eliminating Mike from the competition. And then one of our we appointed an intern who had the audacity to jump in and threaten my score on her first or second day. Now this was almost unacceptable,
so we fired her.
So we fired her. She no longer exists.
So you like games that bring out the sociopath in you?
Yeah, but it's the kind of latent sociopath. So in every other Walk of Life, I'm not competitive in any way, shape or form. So on a five-a-side
you pitch, push that old lady over today, try and get in front of her
from the train. This is true. Okay, so there are conditions. There are
you really need it.
In every Walk of Life, I'm not particularly competitive, but If the game gets the sweet spot, on both occasions, Rayman Jungle Run and Punch Quest, obviously they have the addictive properties, they have Game Center implemented or integrated, and if you've got a critical mass of colleagues who are naturally discussing that game in the work environment, virtual, physical, whatever, you do get egged on.
There is peer pressure.
And then you throw in Twitter, you throw in kind of obviously game set challenges that were rolled out. I don't know, was it about 4 or 5 months ago? That's quite an organic, quite a what's like a viral way of laying down the gauntlet. And yeah, it happens. Like I say, in every other Walk of Life, I'm not particularly competitive, but on those two occasions, Rayman Jungle Run actually, it's the gauntlet chapter, the gauntlet stage at the end, which you obviously have
the
to
land of the
for by
live it dead.
Yeah, by completing or by basically acing five of the regular levels, and then you set and I think you've explained on previous podcasts, you have to set like a landmark or a milestone. And it was just, again, just the idea that I wasn't top of my section was infuriating me. So again, I would spend 25 minutes after Champions League Live. Champions League Tuesday on a Wednesday.
It sounds like these games are A, fantastic, and B, should be kept away from you at all costs.
How good they were, on occasions I was distracted from Champions League highlights and I missed crucial goals.
Wow.
And this is ITV, this is premium, this is golden.
Damn. That's quite the recommendation.
Crash recommendation I could possibly.
So you've taken two there, which is possibly handy.
Somebody else has explained Ryan McDonald because I haven't really elaborated, but it was just that's the final gauntlet chapter, the land.
Those two, that's what you're interested in.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Peter, what captured your eye this year?
So I really got into premium games this year. super got into
Mark
those.
Brewing a premium.
Really got into those, and I've talked loads about Clash of Clans and Skylanders Lost Islands. I think they're amazing. My Little Pony review went out last week. That was alright.
Friendship Magic.
Sort of is.
Friendship's a bit magic, and Rainbow Dash is really,
really
expensive. But not anymore.
Yeah, well, that's lucky.
Game off the price.
Because, yeah, I mean, we...
Anyway, because of bronies.
Bronies. Ooh, that's me.
That's you, though.
Yeah, that is also now me. But I think the game that I spent the most time on, and sort of, like yourself, Rich, like what I obsessed over for a huge amount of time, was Super Hexagon.
Super Hexagon.
Yeah. And I just think that Kavanagh is a genius. The games that he's making are just... They're at once very minimal and very like pre-8-bit visuals. And there's a tendency for some people, for some developers, to fall into this idea that just making 8-bit visuals kind of instantly gives you the style and you get away with doing that, and I think that rings a bit false most of the time. But Kavanagh kind of goes earlier than that and goes to sort of like a souped up Atari 2600 visual style, but it has so much impact because of its sort of flash, and it has a sort of epicness even though it is so basic. And again, like, it's this competitive aspect. It's Super Hexagon is so hard, and I think the real competition is on the basic first difficulty. I don't think Super Hexagonist or anything like that, you know, the sixth tier is particularly interesting because you're dead after 4 seconds, but that first one where you can hit 60 seconds and then you think, well, maybe I can hit 70 and 80, it's so compelling to play against your friends. That soundtrack is burned into my skull now. Like, it's just...
Even I listen to the soundtracks. It's a good soundtrack. If you like chiptune stuff, it is very well done.
I think even if you don't like chiptune stuff, it's got that old video game great, you know... Like, the Mega Man theme, for example, is a great song outside of it being a chiptune classic. Like, it is just a brilliantly put together song. So it's like the Street Fighter opening music and, you know, all that sort of stuff. There are those classic themes. But yeah, like, Chip Zao is just the soundtrack on that is just amazing. And just trying to beat other people's scores and beating Sinan Cover was a highlight of my year, because I have a bit of a rivalry with him. So yeah, and I just think it's absolutely brilliant. And basically everything Kavanagh has touched this year has been gold. Like, it's just brilliant. So,
well, I'm noticing the theme that the highlight of everyone's year so far seems to be vengeance.
Well, I mean, the other highlight was True Skate, and that was something that was completely... Oh, yeah. There was no, like, social integration. That was actually kind of something that I felt kind of let down a little bit, but just kind of like skating around a world and much like Skate on consoles, for example, where it is just you getting better at an activity. True Skate has that in spades, and it was just very fluid. And the problem with it is that there's not enough diversity to it. But it is
that one arena, wasn't it?
Yeah, that one arena. But again, like, for a sort of solo play, that for me was amazing. But yeah, I think Super Hexagon is just It's just one of the games of the year, basically.
Well, picking up on the Terry Kavanagh thing, I'd be interested to hear your opinion on this, Mark, because you are a noted fan of the pixel art styling. This is one of your weaknesses, I know. And I have seen some... Obviously, there's been a huge amount of praise for the Terry Kavanagh games with VVVVV and Super Hexagon and things. There's also been a tiny little bit of a The Emperor Has No Clothes sort of, are these games really that good, or is everyone just jumping on them because they're kitsch and cute and... Isn't it clever? I have seen a little bit of that photo. Where do you stand on the Kavanagh stuff? Are you a fan or...?
Well, I'm not a big fan of the artwork. It's a little bit too lo-fi for my taste.
Okay.
But I think they've got that thing where they're just on that right cusp of difficulty, where they're really hard, but if you get it right, you feel really satisfied with yourself. So I think that's what drives people. I mean, my brother told me he's been playing VVVV on his 3DS. There was one section, like one room, he spent half an hour on. But then when he did it, he felt, you know, amazing about it, so...
It's always tricky, that difficulty curve thing, because you can say that smashing your head against the wall to get through a brick wall is... When you get through, I imagine it feels great, but it's still not on a decent investment of your time. But if it's something ridiculously easy, then it's kind of...
But it is true difficulty. Honest. That's the thing that Kavanagh deals in. Like, it's actually a tough game. It's not broken. It's not like the game's throwing, like, 1,000 bullets at you and you've got no way of getting out of the way. It's... You messed up, like, go back and try again.
And that is the sign of the good ones, I find, is when you mess up and you don't get cross at the game, there's that knowledge that that was my fault and I need to carry on. And when you're screaming at the game for broken physics or for screwing up, that's one thing. But when you realise it's your own failing and you kind of accept it and try and better yourself, that's when you know you've got something really good. So that's a good one. What about you, Mark? What did you like this year?
Oh, bloody hell. I liked The Room.
I still haven't played
it. It's coming out on iPhone this week. It was an iPad game. It is a game where you are in a room and there is a puzzle box in the middle and you have to sort of open it up, and it's this deeply layered box of all these little nooks and crannies. You have to sort of swing around the box and find little dials and buttons and things on it, and it's this weird little thing, and you keep opening up layer after layer after layer, and there's these little clues of like a weird story coming along about like a sort of mad scientist who found some new element or something and disappeared, and you sort of, that's sort of keeping you going. But these boxes are just like ridiculous, also physically impossible. It seems like the one inside the box is bigger than the one before it. They'll like open up into like this planetarium and this light show around you and stuff. It's an absolutely beautiful game. It's just so engrossing because you just want to keep going and find out like what is this story all about, and also what are these puzzles. The only shame is that it ends before you get the answers. No.
Oh, really? Setting up for a sequel? Or?
Yeah. Sequel coming soon.
Ah.
Is that exclusive?
It was on their Facebook page.
Damn. Well, that's something I really wanted to play, but my iPad one will not allow unfortunately. And I was kicking myself at that one because it does look great. Or any of those ones that are, there seems to be an emphasis on atmosphere from what I've seen, where it's almost a little bit creepy.
It is a bit creepy. You've got this sort of weird like grandfather clock chiming in the background and stuff. You don't really know. There's like no real sort of setup. You just sort of appear in this room and there's this box, and what's this all about? It's all about this sort of spookiness, eeriness.
Awesome.
The thing about the room for me was that you've got a lot of sort of point-and-click adventures stuff on iOS. And it never quite works like you think it should, because you are literally just pointing. So it should be that I'm pointing, but it always feels a bit cumbersome. But with The Room, you were manipulating things. You were pulling them out and twisting them and cranking things, and it felt like you were actually in the room with this weird, freakish object in your goggles. And it really is one of the, I give it a 9, I think. I should maybe have given it a 10. But I can't just throw them out willy-nilly.
Now I've ruined, now I explained Bryce badly, you should have done it.
Yeah.
That could have been your other platinum.
No, well, sorry guys. But yeah, it is just not like anything else as well, which really stands out as this sort of, it has an atmosphere and it has a feel all of its own. It's very good. You should play it.
And now I have to buy an iPad. Mr. Keith.
Hello.
There are all these things we were talking about here. These are all games, right?
So you've all been very highbrow. You've all been very... I don't think you'll like my favourite games.
Which of the four is it?
Actually, my favourite game is a bit of a cheat because it was iPad last year. So it's my favourite game last year, and it's my favourite game this year because it came out on iPhone this year.
which is Kingdom Rush.
That is
endlessly about forever, but still brilliant. But my favourite games this year have been Angry Birds Space. Really liked Angry Birds Space.
Really? The populist
thought Rovio did really well with that. I mean, I liked Angry Birds Star Wars as well, but Angry Birds Space was just really clever. Slightly change it, not too much, keep people involved, but also grab some people back who maybe drifted away. Mm-hmm. Presented just like no one presents games like that. It's just, that was for me when you think, okay, these guys actually do know what they're doing. They're very clever. These guys are going to go, they already have gone far, actually.
They're up and coming.
They're going to make some money at some point, you know. You'll hear of them again. But no, that, I really enjoyed that and still kind of play that on various, because it's on every single platform on Earth. I've gone back to it numerous times. Really also like CSR Racing. Didn't expect to.
Oh, yeah.
Read a lot of the negative stuff about it. Got into it. Actually got addicted to it for a long time. But for me, I mean, I know lots of people different opinions about Freeman, but for me it was the perfect balance of, it's very clever in that it doesn't really restrict gameplay. It restricts additional things like collecting cards, stuff like that. You can play it perfectly fine. I did pay out, actually, because I was enjoying it that much. But you can play it without ever paying, and it's just a really clever idea of knowing what the iPhone is, knowing what it can handle, but presenting it, not stripping it back, layering it with this kind of world of racing. And it competes with these much bigger console races because it knows what it is, but it, you know, it's a proper developer's game, I think. It's very clever. I did lose a lot of hours to that.
Did you make a custom number plate?
Yes, I can't remember what it was there then. I had a nice orange focus. But
mine said butts.
I'm ashamed for sniggering at that.
Equally on that level. And the other one I really enjoyed was Super Mole Escape, which I played for quite a long time, which kind of proved to me that you can still take that kind of endless runner kind of thing and make it seem new.
Picking up on the endless runner thing, just to throw an extra one into the mix that I know a number of us here have played and actually liked, worthy of honourable mention is Into the Dead. Occasionally, on people who read the site, and obviously if you're here, you probably do, know that we have up and down opinions on the freemium model. We don't have a universal hatred or love towards it. Obviously, it's well established now, but it's something that can be done well and it can be done badly, so it depends how you implement it. Into the Dead seems to do it really quite well, not just by using the model effectively, but just by being a good game. You realise, Peter, you're a big premium fan. Have you played Into the Dead yet?
No, but I mean, I guess you're sort of talking on the same lines as like Punch Quest was originally.
Where it was a really good game. Yeah, to the point where no one's spent any money.
Yeah, exactly.
And it died, making it not a good freemium game.
Yeah.
Actually, weirdly.
We can see you.
But Into the Dead is something that, again, Mark played it first and it was said he was having great fun doing so we picked it up and had a go. And it's really, really good fun. It's an endless runner. You said about reinvigorating the endless runner format, Keith. It is an endless runner that's done from a first-person perspective. So you're charging forward. It's sort of almost, it's monochrome, so it's black and white. But there's lots of fog. It's just you're going through fields and you're going through a kind of like bushes, long grass, that sort of thing. And there are just zombies popping up in the distance. And it's your job to either tilt or you can use gesture controls to steer left and right and basically avoid the oncoming zombies. You can also pick up power-ups, you can grab guns, that sort of thing. The zombies show up in the distance as kind of the glowing whites of their eyes, and then eventually they come into focus. There's a lot of fog around, so you can't really see what's coming, and the camera itself is a very sort of first-person shaky cam, so it seems to, you know, move around a lot, and when you move left and right, or if you accidentally brush against a zombie, it kind of shakes around all over the place, and then it carries on. Really, really atmospheric, like weirdly atmospheric, more than you think it would be. Very engaging, very incredibly replayable, where you get to the distance and then stop and you go back to the beginning again. And the way that they progress through the missions is using like two or three objectives to complete each mission, isn't it? So you would, like, say, it says, not just get to a certain point, it's like, oh, use a shotgun on this character, or, you know, three specific little things that you would do, and then that sort of levels you up, rather than just reach 300 metres, then reach 400, then 500. A really inventive way of doing it. How do they implement, because I haven't actually spent any money on it. I generally don't do with these things. When you start dropping money, what do you have to buy?
You can just sort of get the gun straight away. If you don't want to do the missions, you can just get the chainsaw and the shotgun and the Uzi straight away. You can also choose to like skip some of the mini-missions for a small fee.
Right.
But you can also earn all this cash just by playing the game.
Yeah.
And also you get these like buffs where you can have, like, you start with a weapon or they're more crates or more ammo,
mm-hmm.
and they cost like a very small amount. So it's just about sort of juggling your money how quickly you want to progress through the game. But I just like running through fields and cornfields and forests full of zombies, so I'm happy to keep playing.
That is the thing. You can say that you can either pay to unlock it quickly, or you can grind to get them yourself. You can earn the energy. And in some cases, most of the cases, grind has a very negative connotation. But if the game is really, really good fun, it's not grind. It doesn't feel like grind. It's genuinely fun. You want to go back and do it. And this is one of those games that feels like that. I don't have any desire to pay because I don't want to not play it. I don't want to speed up the process. I'm quite happy to go back and try again, which is a real sign of a good one. So it only recently came out, but worthy of honourable mention.
Here's my competitive streak resurfacing. Ooh. Mark sent me a Game Centre challenge yesterday afternoon.
Oh dear.
For Into the Dead. He'd set
5,703.
Yeah. Roughly. So I immediately downloaded, because obviously through Game Center challenges you're invited to accept the challenge, and I redirected to the App Store. Obviously it's free, so no friction. Downloaded it, played it once, thought not going to get near that delete.
Oh really?
So because I...
Was that for your own well-being?
It's, yeah, for my own sanity. I know that I can play an Endless Runner twice, determine how much time am I willing to dedicate to devote to this? Not necessarily just this challenge, that's an isolated incident, but how much time am I willing to dedicate to getting good? That's going to mean nothing.
Parentheses, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. And I just decided there and then, I think it was this morning, delete.
Probably
stand so. Losing.
And you've got to focus all your time on those Rayman Jumper Run high schools.
Well, I believe I've set Rayman Jumper Run kind of scores or targets and punch best targets that can't be surpassed. So satisfied my contribution to 2012.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
Yeah, I've laid this all down, so anyone wants to challenge across my Game Center network, fine, go for it.
Okay, the gauntlet has officially been thrown down. So if you want to keep him up all night, go and beat it, and then imagine him just sitting there on the edge of his bed playing until 5 in the morning.
Angry.
After the Champions League,
on a Tuesday, Wednesday.
Fair enough.
It's kind of a weird balance, though, because most of these Endless Runners are free, which is cool because there's no friction and anyone can join in and you can just recommend the game and everyone gets in on the challenge because it's free. But then on the flip side, that also means they've probably got some kind of things where you can pay for stuff. And you can buy things that make you bypass parts of the game, and you can kind of buy your way to victory. It's like a weird balance sometimes. You know, we want to all be playing on the same level playing field.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the reason I'm very good at Into the Dead is I've played it a lot and I've got the Uzi.
Which I think works for life as well.
Yeah.
Well, by the sound of things, quite a good year for iOS, really.
Not bad.
Yeah, did all right.
And even more devices. We now have iPad minis to play on as well. So there's a kind of slot in between devicey thing. Which I actually, physically, no, not all of us, unfortunately.
We're not allowed to say on our iPad minis.
No, but a couple of us are. And I'd seen them in the flesh beforehand, but I know you've been quite enjoying it, haven't you? How do you feel about it, actually, Mark?
It's pretty... I like the device because it's light, and I quite like the smallness. It's just that screen, having used the Retina iPad for so long.
Going back to 1024
Not nice for reading on and stuff. It's like the perfect size for an e-reader, but the screen's not nice enough, so I'll wait for the Retina one before I actually put my money down.
I think that's probably going to wrap it up for this week's podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Can we get a sign out from Harry?
Bye.
Rich?
Bye-bye.
Peter?
Bye.
See ya.
Keith?
Yeah, goodbye.
Say Sega.
Say what?
Sega.
No, you can't put pressure on me. No,
do it!
No, these things have to be spontaneous. You can't just... I'm not here for your amusement.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. No. I refuse.
Sega! Thank you, Keith. That was very good.
That was me.
That was so Keith Andrew there. Go to pocketgamer.co.uk to read anything about the stories that you heard this week, and follow us on Twitter at pocketgamer. Go to pocketgamer.biz if you want to hear the behind-the-scenes stuff as well.
And Facebook.
And QI. And all the other properties. Oh, cross-promotional joygasm.
Exciting.
It's very exciting. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Join us next week for probably one of the last ones before Christmas. We're coming up to the run-up. But until then, we will catch you next week. Bye-bye.